Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the EDH Retcast. My name is Matt Morgan. You heard me right. It is me, Matt. I'm stepping in as lead host, well, co-lead host, whatever it is. But anyways, this week we do have Dana. Dana, how are you doing today?
I am doing pretty great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Any jokes for us this week?
You know, I've been thinking about doing lunges to try to get myself in shape. But it would be a big step forward.
Yes, it would be. It would be. Always taking care of your health. It's
exactly.
Carrying yourself forward. I got nothing. You beat me to it. Well played, sir. Well played. But anyway, so yes, it's just us two. It's Dana and I this week. Joey's taken a little week off, giving him some time away. And so since Joey's gone, we wanted to talk about ourselves this week. And so Dana, you and I have a pretty vastly different approach to something. And so we wanted to talk about it this week. So can you introduce to everybody what it is we're talking about this week?
We are going to be talking about the differences in how we update our decks, particularly when a new set comes out, because you and I take very different approaches to this.
Very, very, very different approaches. You're absolutely right. So yes, we'll talk about that. We got some quick shout outs to do before we get into the main topic, though. So let's take care of those and we'll move forward.
First, I want to shout out Chase, also known as Manicurves, for their help in editing the show. You can find them on Twitter at Manicurves.
And you can support the show by liking and subscribing to this video on YouTube, by subscribing and leaving reviews on your local podcast apps, or by going to patreon.com/EDHRetcast, where you have patron tiers of all sorts of levels. Whether you want to join the Discord community, you want to see all the episodes a day early, just a nice way to get a little something for yourself and more over at patreon.com/EDHRetcast, including the special weekly shout out. So Brad Fowler, nobody has ever smelled. I can't think of a fouler joke. That joke was pretty foul. That is my fault. But Brad, thank you so much for the support. We definitely appreciate that as well. So Dana, main yes. topic, updating our decks. So everybody does it and sets come out all the stinking time. So why you do this all the time and I do this not all the time, maybe once right. in a time.
Right.
So it's really interesting with all these sets that are coming out. I just want to talk about you for a second because you pour so much energy into updating decks. What is it just when you go to update your decks and a new set comes out, what is that process even like for you?
So first I'll describe the process, but there's an interesting note to make about it. But
okay.
the process for me. So, you know, spoiler week or 2 weeks or whatever happens, and we get this deluge of new cards coming in. And so I have a spreadsheet with all my decks, and when a card is previewed, it catches my eye, I'll make a notation next to the deck that, oh, I want to add, you know, Demolition Field into these three decks that are still running Tectonic Edge or something.
Sure.
Because that seems like that would be an update. So I will just make a note, Demolition Field, whatever. But, you know, I don't necessarily do that religiously or pay that close of attention. It's just if something obviously catches my eye, I add it. Then on Fridays, when we get that official full visual spoilers, whatever, from WotC, when, like, every card has been previewed, I specifically take, like, an hour and go over the full list of cards. There's a couple reasons for that. Number one, this is a thing we do, like whether it's this podcast or writing about stuff for EDH Rec or, you know, just wanting to be somebody in the field who knows what they're talking about. I want to know what every card is that has been released does, or at least give myself a chance to know what they are.
Okay.
And to a degree, I think I'm sure everyone in the content creation game does some of that. I mean, like throughout content creation or throughout preview week, people are talking about cards. You and I, even though you don't necessarily add new cards to decks, like you're aware of what's being released too. So like there's a professional component to it.
Yeah, Dana, whether you're Sheldon Mennery, who is the king of the format, essentially, or, you know, you're the One More Mana Squad, who, you know, they're just a YouTube channel. They stream every now and then. But everybody in the content creator sphere, almost, I would say,
yeah,
they do some sort of tracking and keeping up with decks. And it's just for content, even. I mean, you see all the
absolutely
the new SEO type of videos trying to hype up the new sets. Like, everybody kind of has to do that if you're in the content creator sphere. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Even though, like you said, I don't update decks near as much, I still do follow preview season.
But the next level of that I do is then on that Friday when I'm reading through all those cards, I will make a note of just like, okay, oh, this card is good for this particular deck. So in that spreadsheet next to the appropriate deck, I will add in, you know, I want to look at this card closely for the deck. Maybe it's not necessarily going to wind up going in, but I'll usually wind up with like two or three, or, you know, depending on the set, if the set has a lot of overlap with that particular deck and what it does, maybe there's, you know, five or six cards that I'm thinking about adding.
Mm-hmm.
So I will add those to that spreadsheet next to the deck list. And then over the course of the next week or 2 weeks or whatever, I will make those changes. So like, I'll go through, okay, I'm looking at these three cards or these four cards for this particular deck.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to, like, do I really want them? Oh, I misread this card. So this card isn't as good as I thought it was. Or, oh, this card is better than I thought it was. I definitely want to add that. So what can I swap out with? So that's my first thing I do, is get that stuff down in that spreadsheet so that I can take the next step of finding swaps.
So you mentioned that you know, as we're going through preview season, do you start throwing cards onto, you said spreadsheets. Anybody who's listened to the podcast knows you have your big expansive spreadsheets and history of all the cards in and out. Do you start adding new cards from a new set during preview season as kind of a, I'm just going to throw everything here and see if it sticks? Or do you wait until we have the whole set previewed, I guess?
I start thinking about it pretty quickly, particularly if it's something that, like, I'm definitely adding to the deck.
Okay.
So like, to use the most recent set, we got the new Glissa, the Trader variant is a Glissa Sunslayer. Well, I knew it was going to go in the deck at the very least, and maybe replace Ghost of the Trader atop the deck. So, like, that was something, once it was previewed, it was immediately on the list. And then I began, you know, in the back of my mind, or while I'm, you know, sitting doing something that's in thinking about Magic or whatever, like, I'm kind of mulling over what I want to do with that card. So, like, right away, I'm immediately thinking about stuff for sure.
So you have all the cards that you've kind of thrown into your spreadsheet. You have Gliss of the Sunslayer. Do you go through every single deck looking for a card or an opportunity to add cards? Or how do you kind of prioritize everything? Do you make sure you spend time on every single deck, or do you just kind of go through the set first?
So I go through the set first, because I know what my decks do. I don't have that many decks, or some people that are running, you know, 50 decks or something. Maybe it's more difficult. I'm, you know, at 12 to 15-ish at any given time. Mm-hmm. So I know, okay, I have a fling deck that cares about plus one counter stuff. Does this card interact with what the deck's doing? No, well, then I don't care, right? Like, so it's easy to see what cards might interact with what deck to, like, at least make that first cut.
Mm-hmm.
Very infrequently is there one that doesn't quite register mentally, like, oh, that would be good for that deck.
Sure.
I've just been doing this long enough that, like, I can see what things visually are like, oh, yeah, this will be good for this deck. That'll be good for that deck. And at least put it down on the things to consider list. And that whole process, like, going over those cards, number one, because I've seen most of them that week already, or things have gotten spoiled, we've talked about it. I go through the list. It takes about an hour to go through the full spoiler list and, like, put down the things that I want to put down. That's an hour-ish process on a Friday.
So that's actually right there. That's a stark contrast compared to how I approach,
sure,
when I'm adding cards. So you said you look through the set preview and then kind of figure, okay, that would probably be good in this deck. That would be good in this deck. I kind of do it the inverse way, where I go to Scryfall, I set in the parameters for what that commander is, whether the color identity or whatever, and then I go through the set from there. So I'm taking it deck by deck instead of set by set. So that right off the bat,
sure,
kind of flips the axis on how we approach. I'm looking to add stuff to a certain deck, whereas you're looking to add the cards into any given deck.
Well, in one thing I will note about this process too, so this has its roots in when I first started playing Commander 10 years ago now, I guess, you know, 2012, 2013.
Sure.
When we were getting four sets a year and we were just getting those that bundle of four or five commander decks. So with those long gaps in between sets, it was like a big deal. Oh, even like a core set that was pretty basic and didn't have a lot of stuff in it.
Yeah.
That was exciting because like we hadn't seen anything for 4 months before that. So this process has its origins in just like me being hyped to see new cards and wanting to add into my decks. I'm still excited to see new cards that in the decks, but it's changed to be almost a self-defense mechanism at this point. Because if I don't do it like this and do it every set, I'll just fall so far behind that I can't keep back up. Like I will never remember if I wait 6 months to do this and four sets have came out, I'm not gonna remember this card that got released two sets ago or this one, you know, whatever it is, this one pricker interaction that I want to test out in this deck. I'm just not going to remember it.
Yeah.
So it's very much become a thing that I feel like if I don't do it, it's like doing the dishes. Like you can do your dishes every night, or if you don't, have it come into like a hoarder house. And I'm like, I don't want to get to that situation where like I do my dishes once every 3 weeks or something. I just got to stay on top of it.
I live by myself, so I can get away with doing my dishes like every sure, other day. Sure. So it's like, okay, there's two cereal bowls today. I guess I got to do both of them. But you're correct, though. There is absolutely a something to be said for making the habit of that and just keeping up with that. That applies not just to updating your decks, but just anything in life. You make it a habit. It's easier to keep doing. And so I like the point that you've kind of set here where you make it a habit. I sit down, I do this, and I do it every single set just to make sure that muscle memory almost is kind of a thing that's absolutely something that a lot of people just they can't keep up with. And that's awesome that you are able to.
Well, and to give a real world example of this, so there's a list I have of a Marwyn the Nurturer elf ball deck. Mm-hmm. So Marwyn is a commander that taps for mana based on what her strength is, and she cares about elves. It's a really good commander to build a mono green elf deck around, and you can build a very solid budget Marwyn list. Mm-hmm. So I have this Marwyn list that's like $20-ish that I have together that I take with me to my LGS, and it's if someone is in the shop who just is like starting to learn commander or wants to play a game with us, I either have this deck that I can play that's lower powered against somebody, or I can loan it to somebody who's wanting to try out commander. And it's relatively straightforward. You're just playing elves. Your commander does a really straightforward thing. And because it's a cheap deck, if the person was cool to play with, I could just tell them to keep it. Like, I'll keep that. Yeah, just keep it. So
sure, sure.
So that's the purpose of this deck. And it's, so that's not one that I update, except for like maybe once a year, I'll be like, well, I should just check and see if there's any cool elf for the Marwyn list that came out. And I just did that about 2 weeks ago, which required me going back through and like having to do filter searches for anything in mono green that was an elf. And that wasn't too terrible because there was not that many. I mean, there was, you know, 12 or 15 released, but like,
sure, sure.
That wasn't that difficult. But then I'm like, okay, what other mono green toys came out that would be cheap that the deck would want? And I have to, I'm like going off memory because there's no way to really search cool mono green toys in Scryfall. I have no way to do that. So I'm having to look for, okay, what specific things from the deck? Well, there's a lot of, you know, cheap instant speed spells that like give your commander a power bump and maybe untap it or something like that. That's super useful when your commander has a tap, make mana ability. Well, have there been any of those released in the last year? So like it turns into a much more difficult, a much more time-consuming process to try to update that deck if I wait a year to do it versus like any elves this month, anything that like when I have it in mind, when I'm specifically reading the list of new cards for things that go in that deck, it's just a much smaller time commitment than it is to try to do it once a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and you're super correct too on it's hard to remember. It's easy to remember the big things that kind of are themed around what the deck is doing, but all the in-between utility cards, like remembering that Tyvar's Stand is a new card that just came out,
right,
that you're going to want to put in a lot of different green decks. But if you forget to do it for a couple sets, yeah, you're going to forget about cards like Tyvar's Stand and all those look kind of the commons and uncommons that we love on this podcast. But when you're going through and in building decks or updating decks, you don't always remember to look for those types of cards.
Right, exactly. And when there's this many sets coming out per year, at least me, my short-term memory, I just am not going to remember all of them. Like maybe I could when there was three or four sets coming out, you know, 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I almost kind of miss the days where the routine that I still am in where I don't update decks near as often as you do, but that was okay because that's how often we got new cards. Whereas you kept up with the times. I just kind of sat there and crossed my arms and pouted a little bit.
I guess in the thing is, it's only a big deal if it bothers you if your deck isn't updated. Mm-hmm. Like I could also, like, yes, it would be a lot of work to go back and through and do all of them, or I could just not care, right? There are plenty of people that, like, I built this deck. If I see a really obvious upgrade, I'll add it, but I'm not going to pour over the minutiae of the list, you know, week in and week out. I can't not do that. Just the way I brew and play, like,
yeah.
I have to always find some screws to be tightening here or there. So, that would bother me more than, like not updating my deck. Would bother me more than the time commitment it takes to do it the way I do it. So
fair.
I have just accepted that this is a thing I do whenever a new set comes out.
Fair. I mean, accepting that you have a problem is the first step,
right?
Or whatever, right, exactly. Whatever it is they say. So a question then that I just kind of thought of here is, you said people, they tend to kind of feel bothered if they don't have their decks updated. Do you ever feel obligated to put in a new card just because it's a new card and take out anything for like the new hotness? Like, I know, for example, one of the new cards from Phyrexia, All Will Be One, the Conduit of whatever it was. I forget the name of it. I'm sorry. Conduit of Worlds. There it is. I took it out because, and I put it in to my Angry Omnath list, and I took out Ramming Up Excavator, which is one of my favorite cards that I've had for a long time. And you and I were talking about it on Twitter, and Olivia Gobert Hicks, one of the rules committee members, said, or hear me out, just play what you want to play. Right. I was like, well, I get that. And I love Ramming Up Excavator, and I agree with you in spirit, but I also want to try out the new cards every now and then. Do you ever have that situation where you feel obligated to try the new cards for the sake of trying new cards?
So I do have enough decks that, like, there's just always changes. Mm-hmm. It's not like if I maybe was someone who had like three decks or something, maybe I would not have enough call to add decks to cards of decks. Maybe I would have to force a little bit more. That doesn't really work out that way for me. I just have enough decks that, and I've tried to make them be different enough from one another that it's just going to hit a different enough quadrants. Like when a set comes out, the odds are just going to be, it's going to have, there will be a handful of cards that I will want to at least consider.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I do is there'll be a card that comes out and I'm like, I'm not really necessarily sure this card is going to work in my deck. Matter of fact, I'm fairly sure it won't, but I don't know that for certain. And I don't want to just dismiss it outright. Specifically, that's actually something I think I found I do more and more as I'm doing content creation than I did before I was doing content creation. Because before I felt like, well, if the card winds up being good in 6 months, I'll just add it to the deck. Who cares? Whereas I'm trying to like make sure I'm doing my due diligence kind of in testing out cards and not just going with my default assumption. So I think as I've done this podcast, one of the things I make it a point to do is try out stuff.
Sure.
Even if I'm not that sold on it, just because I want to say I've given it a try before I've come to a conclusion.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I'm at the point where I want to try new cards, but also I'm so attached to all the cards of the deck. They say like, oh, keep the pet cards you want. I'm like, well, everything's a pet card at this point for all my decks.
Yeah.
And so I like, if I want to try anything new, literally, I have to cut a pet card. And that's the conundrum I find myself in. So I was wondering if you also ever felt the same way. So I'm glad that you just kind of mentally, nope, I have to do it. I have to try out these new cards. So it's good to hear that you at least are actively working against that, because I get myself stuck so often.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is tricky for a lot of reasons. When there's this many sets coming out every year, I think your decks just accidentally get stronger by making swaps. Like when you've got that many more choices of brand new things to add your deck, and no one for the most part is adding bad cards to their decks. They're adding cards that are probably
not
better
very
than
often,
the ones. Yeah. They're upgrading most of the time. So those like incremental upgrades definitely probably add power to a deck. They also make things tighter. So like it becomes, I think, more and more difficult to make those cuts every time. Mm-hmm. And then in my case, I usually have one or two pet cards in most of my decks that are suboptimal, but I like, and I have just decided that this card is just always going to be in the deck. I have a mono white Super Friends deck, and a Lapse of Certainty is a counterspell in that deck. power-wise, it probably isn't necessarily that amazing, but I'm just always going to run in that deck because it's always fun. It always tells a good story.
Yeah.
So that's just always going to have a slot in that deck regardless of power level. So I got, there's a couple of those cards in every one of my decks. So between those kind of things and the fact that I just tinker a lot and have tuned my decks and there's so many cards coming out, it definitely gets more and more difficult with every set to find slots for this stuff for sure.
Yeah, it's getting tight. And often too, you said everybody's always perpetually, you know, upgrading decks. You're very rarely downgrading. I think it's also because too, the point that we love to make here on the show is WotC keeps giving, no matter what the strategy is, no matter what the color combinations you're in, you're getting new things for whatever strategy you're building towards.
Yeah.
That's the super cool thing. And so you always are getting opportunities to kind of tweak and improve your decks, even if it's not something very, very directly and specifically.
Yeah, like once upon a time, you could run every sort of punch and face because there was only five of them in your equipment deck and you could find room for them.
Yeah.
Maybe not now. Like maybe you have to make the determination of which ones aren't as good as your particular list as you would like. Mm-hmm. So you cut them, even though like you think it's super cool to have those swords in your deck and have as many in there as possible. Those things have definitely become trickier and trickier and you just have to make harder and harder cuts because there's just so many good options.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably the most discouraging part for me is there are so many good options. So let me just stick with what works.
Yeah.
I think I kind of just, I get stuck in, I enjoy how they work, how my decks are playing. And I don't really feel super motivated or obligated, I guess is the better word, to change decks and to kind of, I'm not going to fix what isn't broken. Why don't I just find something else that I could maybe break so that then I can fix that later too.
Another thing I guess I've kind of noticed that I think is a positive regarding this, and this kind of branches off from the show we did a few weeks back where we talked about moving to more themed-based decks versus a good stuff kind of deck. Mm-hmm. I do recall, you know, 8-ish years ago or so, when you would get some new bomb mythic creature in a set, and oftentimes I felt like, oh, I want that in all of my decks because it's just so powerful. Like this super good blue creature I want in every blue deck.
Yeah, yeah.
As I've moved to more theme-based decks, and I think have been encouraged to do so, like those play better, at least based on how I play, I found I definitely find myself, even though I have now a dozen to 15 decks, there isn't a ton of overlap anymore. I tend to, this one good card comes out, but it's good for this one deck, and it's not good anything else. I might have plenty of other decks that have blue, but they aren't going to use the card as well as this one specific deck is. But that other deck's going to use this one specific card really, really well. So that is one thing that I think has also definitely changed when it comes to upgrading these decks is there's not a lot of overlap in the way there once was, I think. You know, occasionally you'll get an Assassin's Trophy kind of card. You're like, oh, well, any deck running black and green might want Assassin's Trophy. You know, a little bit of that. Demolition Field, I put in a bunch of different decks. Mm-hmm. It's a colorless land. It can go in anywhere. So there's a few of those. But like, to me, it definitely feels like I do that way less than I did 8 or 10 years ago.
Yeah, thankfully, we don't get a whole lot of cards that are like Demolition Field. Or we only get Arcane Signet every 10 years.
Right.
Where it's something that you just feel obligated. It's so powerful. It's so good that you have to find room for it. I was kind of the same way about Terra Sunder, actually, from the new, or not new, I guess, anymore, Dominaria United set.
Right.
That card, any black-green X deck can play that. And it's just such a powerful and flexible effect. Like it, at worst, it's a naturalize, but then it kind of plays a lateral move to Utter End and those types of cards. So it's just a great flexible card. And I found myself any deck that could play it, I was trying to find a space for it. And that's where I get it. I'm glad that we don't get cards like that very often that are just so universally good. We need to find, it's not just you're finding a slot in a deck. It's I'm finding a slot in 10 decks to make room for this one new universally powerful card.
Right.
Like Demolition. I did the same with Demolition Field too. So at this point, Dana, we would be trying to steal the segue from Joey to move to Challenger Stats. But Joey's not here.
Right. So, would you like to segue into it?
I got to steal the segue last week. Would you like to segue in And I want to make sure that we're taking turns in doing this.
Sure, absolutely, sure.
And everybody should get a chance to segue into challenges.
Absolutely.
Stats.
If you're okay with me taking it, I would
absolutely,
I would
good sir.
Lead that segue. Okay.
Please, I tip my cap to you.
I appreciate that. Thank
please,
you.
Please proceed with segueing.
EDH Rec is a stat-based website with millions of statistics at your fingertips, and we're going to challenge them right now.
Well played, good sir.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So the first challenge we have this week is from a listener at CommonSpence_16. Says, Dana, I'd like to submit a challenge to stats for Infectious Bite in Ivy Gleeful Spell Thief decks. It's showing up in 8% of Ivy decks so far, and it doesn't work with Ivy's copy trigger because it targets two creatures, and Ivy's trigger only allows you to copy things that target a single creature. And yeah, Infectious Bite is one in a green for an instant. Target creature you control deals damage equal to its power to target creature you don't control. Each opponent gets a poison counter. So yes, it's only targeting one of your opponent's creatures, but there's still the clause in it where it has to target one of your own creatures. So it doesn't say two targets or anything. It's kind of split up across the card, but it does require two targets, and I verified that with the judge just to be certain. So yes, this is a card in 8% of IV decks is a pretty significant amount for a card that just doesn't work the way we're assuming the people casting it are hoping it works. So that's a very good challenge, Common Spence. Thanks a lot for bringing it to our attention.
Yeah, we love those challenges where we're finding out non-bows and keying in on those. That's absolutely great. And my challenge this week actually is along the same lines. It is an overplayed, and I'm not saying it's overplayed in every single deck, because depending on the way that you build your deck, it could actually be a very, very powerful card. So the card I'm challenging is Marionette Master, which is 4BB for a human artificer deck with Fabricate 3, which reads you can have it enter the battlefield with 3+1/+1 counters, or you create 3 Servo artifact creature tokens. And then whenever an artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, target opponent loses life equal to Marionette Master's power. So the deck that I'm seeing it, that I'm not really sold on it, is going to be Ashnod the Uncaring, which is the Grixis commander that came in the Brothers of War precons that has Death Touch and the ability of whenever you activate an ability of an artifact or creature that isn't a mana ability, if one or more permanents were sacrificed to activate it, you may copy that ability and you may choose new targets for the copy. So I'm not super sold on Marionette Master in Ashnod the Uncaring decks. Now, yes, you are able to get quite a few Marionette Master triggers from it, but if you're hoping to, you know, sacrifice a whole bunch of treasures, you know, Grixis is very, very good at making treasure tokens. If you're hoping to copy all of those with Ashnod's ability, that actually doesn't work. You don't get to copy the Marionette Master's ability because you have to activate the ability in order for it to be copied. And Marionette Master's ability, it's a triggered ability, not a activated ability. So yes, if you're using Goblin Engineer to sacrifice artifacts, you can do all that, and you're getting to copy those, but the cost has already been paid, so you're not getting another Marionette Master trigger from whatever ability you are triggering with Ashnod's ability there. So there's a lot going on, and I know I'm saying triggered abilities and a lot of just keywords that are going on right here, but the point is, I don't think that Marionette Master is really going to fit into the typical Ashnod deck. Now, if you're focusing it very heavily on having a lot of activated abilities and you're not expecting Marionette Master to kind of crank through the damage like it can do with treasure heavy decks, for example, then yes, Marionette Master is going to be fine. But I think that in a world where we're talking on this whole episode about cards that are just kind of fine, you can kind of do a little bit better than Marionette Master in most Ashnod the Uncaring decks. I'm not saying it should be in 0% of Ashnod decks, but 55% seems very, very high. That's what would be kind of staple territory for that certain commander. And I just don't think Marionette Master is that for every single Ashnod deck. So if you're playing Marionette Master, maybe give it a second look in Ashnod decks, because I just don't think it quite fits.
Yeah, I definitely think it's one of those cards where people are running it, thinking it works in a way it doesn't quite work, for sure.
Yep, and it could be spillover from from having Mishra at the head of the deck too. So people are kind of looking. So who knows? Lots of factors there. But with that, since you brought us in, I'll take us out of challenge stats.
Excellent.
Quite polite of us to share these duties here. We're going to talk about how I update decks, I guess, since you got your turn, Dana. So I guess what are the questions that I need to answer here? Because
So we established that we kind of both start off doing the thing everyone does. We're like, hey, this new cool creature was spoiled. Everyone's talking about it and getting excited and sure it's going to get banned immediately because it's breaking the format, which tends to happen once every set. So you're aware of the things that get released, but that's where we kind of branch off. Once that Friday spoiler list comes out, I'm digging into that and making notes already. And where do you go from there? Like, so are you just, okay, I'm done until the next set? Or what happens from that point onward for you?
So for me, in order to get a card as soon as it's coming out, it has to be an absolute just banger of a card for a certain deck. I'm not jumping to grab the $40 cards. Phyrexia All Will Be One just came out. And yeah, Elesh Norn, Mother of Machines is absolutely a bomb card that I think would fit in a couple of my decks. Mondrak, Glory Dominus, same thing. But I'm also not jumping out to get them. It'd have to be something super, super special for a specific deck for me to kind of get them, especially pre-order them. I almost never have done that in the past, I would say like 10 years. But what I do, if something is going to be very, very good, I will kind of keep an eye on everything. If you look at my Moxfield profile where I have all of my decks, I have the considering list is kind of where I keep a track of cards that I'm like, okay, that looks cool during preview season. I'm going to store the idea there and I'll kind of circle back to it and revisit it. So I'll kind of do that for big cards that jump out at me during preview season. But I'm not actively like tracking, okay, this card has to go in every single one of these. And I forget to do that fairly often. But once the set is done and we have everything out there and we have all the deck lists for the pre-constructed decks that are coming along with it, that's when I'll kind of go over to Scryfall and I'll open up everything. And like I said, I put my filters in. I make sure everything kind of the parameters that I'm looking to stay within. And I do deck by deck searching. I'm going to look at my Balamor deck, for example, which is my Izzet Spellslinger deck. So I'll put in the colors and kind of look with that deck in mind specifically. And I have to narrow the card pool down. Dana, you said that you look at entire sets and kind of track everything. I have to only look at cards with the mindset of one specific deck. Otherwise, I get overwhelmed and the decision paralysis kind of gets me super discouraged from wanting to proceed. That's just how my mind works.
No, I definitely understand that. I mean, it can be a lot to deal with for sure. Because I'm kind of mentally filtering while I do it. Like, okay, I'm going through my white, the white cards on here. Well, I'm aware, okay, I've got five white decks and they all do five specific things. And so like, I'm kind of, it's pretty easy to, when you see that, you know, 2/1 vanilla cat or something, well, that's not going to be killing any of my decks.
Mm-hmm.
So it is relatively easy to filter out those things. Or at least once you've gotten used to it. But I can absolutely see how it's particularly when this happens once a month at this point, or even sooner sometimes.
Yeah, even more often.
It just feels like it's just, I mean, it turns into work then at some point too. It feels like it's not a fun thing. It feels like it was work. I still enjoy it, but I can see how people absolutely wouldn't.
And we said a few episodes ago, we're not here to take on, you know, third and fourth jobs just to build decks. And
right. Yeah.
But also, I have so many decks that I can't look at a complete spoiler of any set and any color and think, okay, I have these four decks that I have to look for at one time. I cannot do that. And so the more decks that you have, the more trying to update all of them at the same time, simultaneously, like in your brain, that just, I don't understand how people can do that. If you do, awesome. My brain doesn't work that way at all. So I absolutely have to filter everything down. I have to pull up a deck. I have the deck list on one screen. And then I have the previews of all cards I could put in there. And I'm working on one deck. And so I'm not trying to, kind of like what I said earlier, you're looking at cards, trying to find a home for them. I'm looking at the home and I'm trying to see what would be welcome there, I guess is the best way I can explain the differences between your approach and mine.
That absolutely makes sense. So when do you decide to do that? Is there like every three sets, every 6 months, or just I'm in the mood to do it, so I'm going to do it? Is there, how do you make the determination when it's time to make a look for upgrades?
If the mood strikes me, that's a good way to put it. So I try to make sure I'm doing it like thoroughly, at least like every couple months. So quarterly at max, but that's like, there has to be a lot of life going on for me to not do it every 3 months, sure. Which like you said, Dana, that used to be maybe a set or two.
Right.
But now that if I do it every 3 months, I'm missing some sort of supplemental product and all this other stuff. So I like to do it at least once every major set. And then I'll just, in the Scryfall filters, I'll add, I want to look at all of these sets all at once. And then I'll search through all the normal parameters there. But still, I have to have one specific deck in mind. I have to have, okay, Tasa Karlov. We're going to look at white and black cards. Here we go. And then I'm scanning for keywords. I'm scanning for anything that looks like it might jump out and help that specific deck. And then I'll add it to the maybe board. I'll keep that maybe board in the considering. That's kind of the living document. You have your Excel sheet. I have the maybe board of all the cards that I want to keep in mind. And then I'm going to kind of brainstorm through once I've just kind of aggregated all of the cards from the newest sets. I have to kind of break it down a little bit before I can just tackle sure. everything all at once.
So because you then have this list of cards that you're kind of considering, does mm-hmm. it sometimes work out that way where you'll have played a deck and like three games in a row, this one card just didn't get the job done? So mm-hmm. like, oh, this, I'm annoyed by this card. What's on my maybe list of the last couple sets on the top? Does that happen sometimes? Is that like the way moves sometimes get made too? Or like something's underperformed and you're just ready to yank it out and oh, look, this card came out 2 months ago and I haven't bought it, but I was considering it. This is a perfect chance to try it out.
Every now and then. So I also look for cards that if there's something new that I want to put in, and I hate to say this, but the Conduit of Worlds example, where the Conduit of Worlds for Omnath Locus of Rage deck, more often than not, is probably just going to be better than Ramunap Excavator. You have to babysit it less because you don't have to worry about board wipes killing all your creatures. The Conduit can sit around. But also you get to cast things from your graveyard, and sometimes you just run out of steam. Sometimes the engines don't get going. And so sometimes for a certain deck, like a pet card can just get outclassed. So if there's a card that there's just a better version of it, there's less hand holding that needs to go along with it.
Sure.
That's probably where I'm going to look at upgrading and putting in a card that requires me to do less for it to be good. Conduit of Worlds was one of those cards that it was just all, and I, you know that I hate when people say strictly better. Very rarely does it ever actually apply.
Sure.
But sometimes it's better for a deck.
Yes.
And so that's where I start to look at things of, okay, is this filling a slot that I'm already doing, but it's just doing something better or something that maybe the deck has a weakness in? Does it help shore things up? But then, yes, you always have to kind of evaluate, what are the cards that are just kind of medium in the deck? What are the vanilla? Granted, I love vanilla ice cream, so I'm not besmirching vanilla, but what are the cards that aren't really exciting anymore? Because you know, we've gone through what kind of players we are. I'm the Timmy. Like, I play this game to like feel some feelings. And if cards are kind of getting boring for me, that's when they start also to get considered for, well, what's something new and exciting that I can get excited to play again? Because this card, it's just been, yeah, it's been there.
Or it's one of those cards where we're like, it's done its thing and the thing is super powerful and you're just, you've accomplished what you wanted to accomplish with it.
Absolutely.
I remember the first time I experienced that was, I remember when I had my first Enchantress deck again years and years ago, and I was flipping through cards of mine. I'm like, Primal Surge, like, wow, that would be great in this deck because there's almost no, it's, you know, it's 90% permanence. I'm like, I would cast this and really often put like 30 cards into play. It's amazing. So I found a slot for it in the deck. I was so excited. I did it literally the one time and put, you know, 50 cards into play or something ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later playing game again, I drew it again. I was like, oh, I don't want to cast this. I did it once. I realized then that I had accomplished the thing I wanted to accomplish with that card, and I was good. I did it the one time. That was super cool, and I didn't want to win that way again. So it came out, and I've never cast a Primal Surge since then.
See, that's such a fine line for me, though, because I love winning in these, like, massive, explosive turns of just like, sure. Holy cow, did you see what just happened? So it's a real fine line of
absolutely.
that that was crazy and holy cow, surge to victory for something massive and then did something yeah, even more right. massive. Like, those are the types of things I love doing. But there's also stuff like, I would say, maybe Lux Artillery, one of those new cards that you basically just get a whole bunch of counters. And if you have 30 or more counters on artifacts and creatures you control, Lux Artillery deals 10 damage to each opponent. So I'm sure that people will try to just, okay, can I kill everybody the turn I play Lux Artillery? Maybe something like that. Right. Like, okay, cool. Achievement unlocked. Got it. Absolutely. Yeah. So sometimes there are things that I want to do at least once, but I also, I don't like building a deck and to do something once. I want to do something that I can have that experience and see what other kinds of things can I do with it. Yes. Like the Lux Artillery piece is part of it, but that's not the only thing I want to do. So I really love the variance of Commander anyways. I love having a different experience and okay, I didn't get my power card. How can I find a way to win in this situation? And so finding other ways to do that, that's where I struggle. And that's probably why actually too, I have so many pet cards because if something makes me feel good, I want to do it again. It's not going to be something that I want to do once. I'm like, okay, cool. Did it. Bye.
So would you then say that you don't necessarily enjoy the process of upgrading your decks? Because like for me, despite the fact that it feels a little overwhelming sometimes, I still do get like a excitement when I see that, when I go over that full list on Friday morning and start putting up potential cards. And there is still enjoyment in the process for me, despite the fact that it's also somewhat self-defense to not have to deal with the hoarder house worth of cards every 6 months. I do enjoy it. Is that something that you find it's not a fun thing? It's just like maybe something you have to do, or do you enjoy it? You just enjoy it your own way.
So that's a really good question. I enjoy looking at new cards and I enjoy the process of tinkering and refining. Cause that's kind of what I do for work anyways, is doing quality control, doing the okay, here's a little deficiency. How can we shore that up? And so my brain already works that way. So it's not that I don't like upgrading decks, but it's finding what to cut. And when I say like at this point, any card that I cut is a pet card, I truly do mean that every card is a pet card, because I don't build decks loosely or haphazardly. I know we talked about how I want to try to do that a little bit more, but for the longest time, I had a Miri Weatherlight Duelist deck. It was Selesnya. It was everything I love to do in Commander, which is turn things sideways, and it's big things. And the process of going from that to Tristani Discordant, that was such a painstaking process, because I knew the deck in and out, but just over time, I had tweaked the deck a little bit, tweaked it here and there, until it was something completely different from what it originally set out to be. And so just changing the commander, it was a lot of thought that went into that. And so it's not that I don't enjoy changing decks and I don't enjoy the process. It's just, man, the one thing I don't enjoy, I guess, about it is finding what to take out, because I put it in there for a reason. And so and especially too, sometimes it feels like with how often I get to play, sometimes I'm cutting cards that I never got to cast to begin with, which is the most frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah. Like, oh, that card came out 3 whole weeks ago and I've not seen it yet in the one time I've played this deck. It must be terrible.
Yes. I've had that thought process. I know it's silly to say, but it's genuine that, oh man, I haven't seen this card yet. It must suck.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's a problem that is going to persist as the release schedule stays as it is.
Does what it do, yeah.
Yeah, there's nothing we can do about that. I have this weird thing where, like, when I'm going to make those cuts, I'll have this list in my spreadsheet of, like, okay, I want to add these three cards. And sometimes it's easy, like sometimes I'm going to add Demolition Field. We keep talking about that card because it's an easy one to reference. And I'm going to take out any Ghost Quarters or Titanic Edges still in my deck. That's an easy swap to make. When I wound up putting Farewell in a deck or two when it was released, I'm like, oh, I'll just pull another board wipe. Like I was clearly happy with the amount of board wipes in my deck, so I'm just going to replace one of them with this other one. But it's not always that easy. Sometimes it's much more complicated.
No.
And I find myself doing this thing where, like, I'll stare at my deck list online and I'm waiting for that thing to happen. Like, when a scientist is trying to like solve the equation in a movie and they're like, he's just looking at the page long enough and like something will like light up and I'm like, oh, there's the solution. I for some reason, I keep thinking that's going to happen. I'll stare at my necklace and all of a sudden I'll be like, oh, that card's terrible. I'm going to pull that one out. Like it's going to somehow pop off the page at me. And it never, ever works that way. I just stare at it a little bit longer and eventually I'm like, well, I guess I'm pulling this because it's time to move on to something else. I've stared at this necklace for 15 minutes and nothing has presented itself as a solution. So I guess this card's coming out. Like sometimes that's what I wind up doing too, where like, I know I want to try this card. Something has to come out. This is the one that's coming out. I got to make a decision. I'm sorry. You're the one that caught my eye. You're the one getting yanked right now.
So it's not the case of, well, this card underperformed, so I'm punishing it by taking it out of the deck.
I mean, that definitely has happened. That definitely happens. We talked about when I do that too. But yeah, sometimes you just got to like, I just need to make a decision. I just got to like, I want to play a card. I can only stare at this list in Archideck for so long before I need to do something. So I guess this is the one's coming out.
I mean, I've definitely had the situation where I was sitting there and I want to lead off and say I'm not a hoarder, but I can be when it comes to taking decks apart or taking cards out of decks where I'll sit there and look at a card and like, well, it'll be really useful if I ever play against this type of deck. But I never play against those types of decks because
Sure. Nobody
does. And so I need to get over. I feel like I get in my own way when I'm taking cards out. I overcomplicate it because I think I put more emotional attachment into the cards that I put into the decks. And so it just gets a little bit harder and I make it harder on myself. I don't have to do that. I should be a little more, okay, let's just try something new. But I like my routines and I like knowing.
Sure.
I guess part of it is the 60 card competitive player in me that I did that for so long where it was, I like knowing the ins and outs of my decks. I have tuned this. I know where I've gotten it to and I don't want to make changes that I don't have to. But then part of Commander is just what do you want to play?
Yes.
Do you have to? No. But do you want to? Yes. And that's the part that sometimes I stumble over myself trying to get to that, or not back to that point.
Yeah, 100%. And the thing I think that gets trickier too for particularly people in our position, the longer you play with these decks, the more emotional attachment you have to cards because you've played them. You mm-hmm. remember that one time that this card did this one thing in this game that made for a great story. And you're like, oh, it hasn't done that for a couple of years, but it did that one time and it was amazing.
Yeah.
And
man,
I don't want to pull that. And like you repeat that process for the other 99 cards in your deck. And like, you're like, oh, they're all my beautiful, amazing children. How can I possibly pick one over the other?
But that's really how on it. Like if we wanted a very, very specific example, that's why Rishkar's expertise is in literally any deck for me anymore. Because I still remember the first time I cast it. I was sitting at the shop with my best friend and his brother and another friend of ours. And I cast it. I drew like 7 cards and I cast something for free. And I was giggling to myself, happy. It just, this card is everything that I want to do in Magic. It's just dump big, dumb things into play. And I love the way that it made me feel. And I still remember that very specific moment. And I'm just chasing that high. That's all I'm doing anymore.
Exactly. And the more you play, the more you have of those things to chase and try to get back to, and it becomes trickier and trickier for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's probably one thing that I need to get better about is, okay, I know you love this card, Matt, but it's not great in this elf deck where everything's a 1/1. You just need to stop. Just get out of your own way.
Right.
And make do the right thing just once, maybe, please. So yeah, that's my biggest struggle. It's not that I guess to answer your question from a minute ago, it's not that I don't like putting new cards in decks. It's not that I don't like looking through new cards, but my biggest struggle is just finding the space for the new stuff. And if there was ever a time that they said, okay, your card, your deck doesn't have to be exactly 100 cards anymore. It has to be at least 100 cards. I would just start throwing all sorts of crap into...
Well, that would end so badly for me.
It would, yeah.
Oh.
And so that's where I'm at and with pulling cards out, I should say. So, yeah.
Well, my last kind of final thought here on this, sometimes when we do shows a little bit like this where we compare, you know, this person does this thing this way and this person does this thing this way, and it's a way to like get ideas and see, oh, maybe that is interesting and I can take a look at doing that. I'm going to guess, however, and I guess you can answer this in a moment, that's not what's going to happen here. I think this is a situation where the way I do it works really well for me, and the way you do it wouldn't work as well for me, and I'm happy with my method, and mm-hmm. the same is probably true with you. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a reason that we've gotten into the habits that we have, and there's no right or wrong. Like, this is Magic. It's a game, but also this is Commander, where you get to do literally whatever you want. And so you can't say, well, this works for me, that's the right way. That just right. doesn't apply. And so whether it's how you play the game, what formats you're playing, how you update your decks, there's room for literally everything in between. And I guess yes. the reason that you and I kind of said, hey, here's something that we're vastly different at, that you want to talk about it. I think that's kind of why we chose this topic, because mm-hmm. you are on one far extreme of the spectrum. You're right. you're very disciplined about how you update your decks, whereas I'm just, I'll do it when I do it. It's like the dishes. It'll be there waiting for me.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, we found our own ways to do this that works very well for us. And I mm-hmm. think that's kind of the important lesson to take away here is just find what works really well for you, because with this many sets out, you've just got to find your own path. And what works for me and what works for Matt might not work for anybody else out there. You might have your own specific way you do this. So
yeah,
I do think it is kind of fascinating how different this particular aspect of deck maintenance, I guess it is for people. But yeah, I think as long as you are enjoying what you're doing, I think that's all that really matters at the end of the day.
Yeah. And we just hope that, you know, some of the ways that we handle our upgrading or updating, however you want to put it, mm-hmm. it's just helpful. Give some people yeah. some tips and tools to update their own decks, however often they want to do it. And there's space for everything in between. I know some people that they do it every other month, but some people, they're updating decks maybe even more so than Dana, because, okay, did I miss any cards? That's always a thing too, that we tiptoed around a little bit, is sometimes you just miss cards and you see somebody playing a card. You're like, how old is that card? And they're like, oh, this came out 2 weeks ago. Why?
Right. We're like, right. We're just talking about like new sets and adding new cards. Like, we're not talking about like, oh, I was at my shop and this person played this thing and like, oh, I forgot that card. It will be perfect for this deck that I built after it came out, or that I just, you know, it was expensive at release and I was going to wait and get it when it was cheaper and forgot about it then or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that thing happens right away too. Like, I'm not just making changes every time a set comes out. I'm making changes not to every deck every week, but like, every week there's at least some change being made to some deck because I thought of a new card or saw an interaction or didn't like another card or whatever. So yeah, that's a whole different thing.
So I guess the one last question before we go to kind of wrap everything up, if there was somebody who wanted to emulate your style, Dana, of I want to make sure every single set that comes out, I'm reviewing everything. What is the biggest piece of advice from your methods that you want to pass on to everybody here?
Take notes,
okay.
Because there's just too much information coming out for you to keep track of all of it. And you're just going to forget this one card that caught your eye. They're like, oh, this will be perfect for this deck. You're going to forget about it. So if a card does in whatever way capture your attention that you think you might briefly want it for this deck, have some kind of way to write that down on your phone, in a notebook, whatever method works best for you, in something that you can just review every month, whatever it winds up being. Because if you're counting on your short-term memory to retain all of those cards that come floating across your vision, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I used to try to do that. And even when we were getting a couple sets a year, that just didn't work with a couple decks. Now that there's this many sets coming out and I have this many decks, and that's just not something that I can that I can keep in my brain. I just need to have something written down somewhere. And doing that has made it way easier for me to kind of go back and look at the thing. Oh yeah, that card I wrote down 2 weeks ago, I forgot. Because you do that. Like, I'll check the list. I'm like, I forgot what that card I wrote down.
Oh, there's a reason I have a row in a box of mine, and it's all cards that I knew I was going to forget about, but I wanted to make sure that I didn't. Mm-hmm. So I just bought a copy. I have cards like Staff of the Storyteller. It's an interesting card. I don't have a deck for it now, but I want to have a deck for it later.
Yeah.
And so I have a copy just in case I ever need it. And I have everything sorted and organized, ready to go. I know I'm going to forget about it because there's so many cool cards that are coming out all the time. So I just make sure, okay, next order, I'm going to throw one of these on there just to make sure I have it. It's a quarter.
Yeah.
I'm not out a whole lot. Let's just do that.
Yeah. Actually, that's a great example because I did the same thing. I don't have a deck for Staff of the Storyteller, but it was cheap. So I grabbed two of them, I think, that are sitting in a potential use bin back there. And it's in the things to be considered pile for white decks because it's a solid card that I don't have a home for, but I liked it a lot and thought someday I'm going to want to use that for something.
Yeah, I probably have probably four or five cards a set that I see and I really like them and I want to play them, but I don't have a place for them yet. And so I'm going to stash this away. I'm going to make sure I remember it when I start building a deck that it could go into. Yeah.
We would be interested in hearing back from listeners out there, though, about how exactly you do this, especially given the glut of releases right now. Are you someone who stays abreast of this, or does the sheer amount of cards make you like just wait till you have a bunch of things piled up? So let us know in the comments section. I'm very curious to see how everyone out there handles this.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of space in between where you and I personally fall. So
yeah.
It'll be very interesting to see what the comment section looks like with how often everybody's able to update their decks and how they update. That's another method too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you very much for listening. I am Dana. You can find me on Twitter at Dana Roach, and I'm writing articles for EDH Rec and Commander's Herald. And you can find all of us together at patreon.com/EDHRecCast.
And I'm Matt Morgan. You can find me on Twitter at Mathimus55. That's MathimuS55. And don't forget, Wednesday evenings, we are streaming over at twitch.tv/EDHRecCast. We have guests on every single week, and it's always a super fun time. So make sure you tune in for all of that as well.
Thank you very much for listening. Remember to click that like or upvote button down below, and we'll be back next week with a new show. Until then, EDH wreck your deck before you wreck your deck.